Hey everyone, it's Marvin. This episode of Books and Boba is brought to you by Home Interrupted, a new podcast from our partners at Feet in Two Worlds. Climate change affects everyone, but it doesn't affect everyone equally. Immigrants often bear a unique burden due to climate change, but they're also leading the way with impactful solutions. Feet in Two Worlds, the news outlet and journalism training organization for immigrant voices, presents Home Interrupted. From flooded basement apartments in New York City to indigenous Maya farming practices in Nebraska, Feet in Two Worlds Home Interrupted brings you deeply reported original stories from across the United States. Episodes drop each week starting April 2nd. Find Feet in Two Worlds Home Interrupted wherever you listen to podcasts.
You're listening to
Whoa!
Potluck.
And welcome back to Books and Boba, a book club and podcast featuring books by Asian and Asian American authors. My name is Marvin Yue.
And I'm Rira Yu.
And we are here to talk about the first Books and Boba book club pick of 2020, The Three Body Problem by Suxing Liu, translated by Ken Liu,
who was the author of one of our other book club picks, The Grace of Kings, which we read in January or February. I don't remember.
Did we? It was a while ago.
I remember I gave our listeners 2 months to read it because it was really long. So I think it was a January / February pick.
Yeah. So thank you for everyone for tuning in again. Hopefully you've all read the book because we're going to go deep into spoilers. Although from experience, I know some of you like to listen to our thoughts before going to a book, which I guess it's okay.
Live your life the way you want to.
But before we get into our book club discussion, Rira has some breaking news for us.
It's not really breaking news now by the time that you're listening to this, but last week, the Asian Pacific American Awards for Literature were announced. And I'm just going to briefly go over the winners and honorees of this year. So the 2020 Asian Pacific American Awards for Literature Picture Book, the winner was Queen of Physics, How Wu Chansheng Helped Unlock the Secrets of the Atom. And it was written by Teresa Robinson and illustrated by Rebecca Huang. The honoree for picture book was Bilal Cook's Doll, written by Aisha Saeed and illustrated by Anusha Syed. And Stargazing by Jen Wang won the 2020 Asian Pacific American Award for Children's Literature. And the honoree went to I'm Okay, and that was written by Patty Kim. And the young adult literature winner was They Called Us Enemy by George Takei. And the young adult literature honoree was Frankly in Love by David Yoon. So those were our winners of the 2020 Asian Pacific American Awards for Literature. Congratulations to all of the winners and honorees. I've heard great things about every single book on this list. We covered them in previous episodes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you read Frankly in Love yet?
No.
It's on your TBR.
I don't have it. I need to borrow it. I have like maybe two friends who have copies of it and they just haven't started reading it. You know, it's like one of those weird things where your friends are like, oh, I really want to read this book. And it takes them forever to pick it up. And I'm like, so when are you going to finish reading the book so I can read it? It's like a weird situation.
What a struggle.
But I did watch the pilot for Ghost Bride.
Oh, I still haven't gotten to watching that series yet.
See, the thing is, I don't have any experience watching Chinese dramas. So my only point of reference are the Korean dramas that I've watched in the past, and I'm guessing that they're a little bit different in terms of production and writing.
You know, at this point, they're probably about the same. I think a lot of the current wave of C-dramas are all very much inspired by K-dramas, which were in part inspired by C-dramas of like the 90s. So like everyone is just biting off each other, and you know, it's kind of how art works, right? Everyone takes what was done before.
I would say K-dramas actually got most of their inspirations from Japanese dramas, because a lot of the early Korean dramas were adaptations of mangas that were really popular. But yeah, the pilot was... The thing is, I don't really remember much of the novel and how it started. So I was like, okay, I guess I'm going in pretty much blind because I forgot, like, the opening chapter of the book. So I don't really know how faithful it was. And also, I'm not knowledgeable in the clothing of that time, like 1890s Malacca fashion. So I was like, some of these costumes look like they are brand new and that they haven't been aged in sunlight like most costumes should be. And I don't know, like the style of the episode is very contemporary. So by contemporary, I don't know how I can explain it, but the way people talk and the humor that kind of comes across, it seems like contemporary rom-com. Honestly, I can't judge the translation because I'm watching with English subtitles and I am not fluent in Mandarin or any of the other audio options on Netflix. But I enjoyed the pilot. I will have to watch the rest of the episodes to like give a clear... answer. But we've gotten tweets from our listeners asking if we're going to do like episodes on our reviews of The Ghost Bride. So,
yeah, I mean, we'll definitely talk about it some more probably in our mid-month check-in when we have more time dedicated to, you know, just talking about whatever
is
happening.
Are we doing it mid-month wise or are we doing it separately?
We can do either. I mean, are you committing to watching this whole thing?
Oh, yeah. I'm going to watch the entire thing. The problem is I have to go reread the book so I can actually give some insight.
I mean, from what I've seen of the trailers, it's quite a departure from the book in terms of just characterizations and also just overall plot. So it'll be interesting to see the difference. But we're here today to talk about our January 2020 book club pick. Which I feel like Rira is doing everything in her power to put off as much as possible.
I'm not, because we, like I said, we had people tweet at us being like, yo, are you going to commentate on this? So, yes, I am dedicating myself to watching the entire series. And you will hear my thoughts because I will have a lot of them.
Yeah.
I have standards.
We'll definitely do our adaptation analysis episode.
See, the problem is, I'm probably going to be the only one out of the two of us who will watch the entire thing.
What do you mean?
Are you going to watch the entire thing?
Yeah, I've already like budgeted time for it.
Okay.
I'm pretty good at binging series. All right. Like, I watched the entire run of The Witcher in like.
Okay, but that's The Witcher, and there's like, what, six episodes?
Yeah. There's like six of this, right?
Oh, is there? I thought it was longer.
No, I think it's like six or eight.
Oh, okay. Then it's totally doable.
Yeah. So, you know, stay tuned to Books and Boba. We'll be bringing you our reactions to not only The Ghost Bride, but also the next big Netflix thing happening in like a week, which is To All the Boys I Loved Before 2.
Yep. P.S. I Love You. Mm. It's going to be released on Valentine's Day.
Awesome. On that note, let's get into our discussion of our January 2020 book club pick, The Three Body Problem by Zixin Liu. This is the description from Goodreads. Set against the backdrop of China's Cultural Revolution, a secret military project sends signals into space to establish contact with aliens. An alien civilization on the brink of destruction captures the signal and plans to invade Earth. Meanwhile, on Earth, different camps start forming, planning to either welcome the superior beings and help them take over a world seen as corrupt, or to fight against the invasion. The result is a science fiction masterpiece of enormous scope and vision. And so this was a book written by Zixin Liu, I think in 2014.
Oh, no, 2006, right? Original?
Yeah.
It was translated in 2014, and it won... It was nominated for the 2014 Nebula Awards, and then it won the 2015 Hugo Awards. And it was the first Asian novel to win a Hugo Award. So yeah. It is groundbreaking. Marvin really wanted to read this book for a very long time. So I am curious as to like knowing what your expectations were. Were they met?
Well, so... this book has been on my radar for a long time just because of just, like you said, the groundbreaking nature of it being a piece of Chinese fiction that won a lot of Western awards and acclaim. And so, and it was lauded as something as like a fresh look at science fiction from a perspective that we don't usually get. So I was super interested in what that exactly meant because I didn't really know. And I mean, reading the book, you definitely see, like, the biggest thing is just perspectives that you don't normally see in science fiction in terms of, like, when we look at, you know, science fiction written in the States, you know, there's a lot of American exceptionalism written into those narratives, right? Like heroic scientists or generals and soldiers fighting against or exploring new worlds. And what really surprised me about the three-body problem is kind of how cynical the whole thing was in terms of, like, its view on what exactly first contact would look like with an alien species that's more superior.
Yeah, I guess I did notice that as well, the cynicism, because in American science fiction, I feel like a lot of it is very heroic, like you said, and also very optimistic. Like, look at all the sci-fi movies that we have.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Independence Day.
Yeah.
I was reading a profile that the New York Times did on Ken Liu, the translator, that came out, I guess, a couple months ago, where he was talking about when he was translating this book for Su Qing Liu, he ended up making a really big change in the, I guess, the flow of the story, where the three-body problem, the translation that we read, started with a few chapters dedicated to the Cultural Revolution and kind of the barbarity and the persecution of the intellectual class, in addition to the kind of interfactional warfare that happened during that time, right? And apparently in the original text, that section was in the middle of the book.
Oh, interesting.
During the flashbacks when he actually meets Ye Wenjie in the present time. And so Ken Liu was reading the book and saying, this section actually makes more sense if you put it in the beginning of the book because it creates the context that would make the rest of the story make more sense. And when he suggested it to the original author, fully expecting to be turned down because who likes being told that you order your story wrong, the author actually told him, yeah, that's actually how I had it in the beginning. And his publishers were afraid that because that section was so critical of the Cultural Revolution, they were afraid it wouldn't get past censors. So they moved it to the middle to kind of hide it.
Because they thought that the people who are in charge of censorship won't get to the middle of the book?
Yeah, they would read that section as a criticism of the government and just like keep it from being published. But since it's in the middle of the book, and as I think both of us noticed, this book is super dense and it actually takes a little bit of effort to kind of get through if you're not like committed to reading it. The book was able to pass through screening and become the big phenomenon that it has become.
That's very sneaky, but very smart. Yeah, I would. Since I don't know how to read Chinese, I asked one of my friends who can read Chinese fluently to see if the translations were, I guess, it matched the tone of the original text. And she only read like maybe the first chapter or so, but she was very impressed with Ken Liu's translation, saying that he pretty much nailed like the cadence of the original text. And it's a ginormous task to translate a book like this, where there are so many like scientific terms, and you also have to put in cultural context without like bogging down the Western readers on history. Try to make sure that the footnotes are kept to a minimum. Mm-hmm. And translation is kind of you're not only just translating like the words, you're also like kind of rewriting the novel in a way, because the original prose is not going to translate perfectly. So I think Ken Liu, like, I can't judge because again, I like can't read Chinese, but like it must have been a tremendous task. And
oh, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. The profile on him, as well as his own notes at the end of the book, illustrate the amount of work that went into translating this to be as close to the source material as possible while also making it accessible for Western audiences. And like that word accessibility is such a huge one for this book because a lot of the book is all about theoretical physics and theoretical science, which it got a little dense. I mean, I know Rira tweeted that if this wasn't our book pick, she would have like dropped it after halfway through.
I would have DNF'd like a quarter of the way in.
And I do feel that because a lot of the science is very like, it's very dense and it's very, because it's theoretical, it does take some effort to go through all that. Honestly, I think for our discussion, you know, I don't think we should like kind of dig into the science per se, because I don't know if either of us are qualified to really talk about what it is. But the story itself, I thought, was super fascinating in that, again, this is a first contact story where essentially it's saying, yeah, humanity's kind of fucked, you know, but were we already fucked?
Yeah. I mean, I liked how like the question of is it wise to reach out to to aliens in space without having a clear idea of what might happen, because whatever happens will forever impact humanity. And yeah. Humanity itself is so divisive, as you can see like in the novel. There are different factions of the Red Coast organization, the organization that reached out to the extraterrestrials and said, hey, humanity is terrible. Please come and annihilate us from this planet.
Red Coast was the military program. I think the organization was actually the ETO, the Earth Trisolaris Organization.
Oh, is that? Okay.
Yeah, that formed with Ye Wenjie and Mike Evans, which is like...
Mike Evans. Okay, like... I had we're gonna jump around, but I had an issue with Mike Evans as
you
with,
mean the white savior white boy?
No, not the white savior white boy. I just thought it was really convenient for an environmentalist who is trying to save birds and planting trees in rural China, and then he comes back as a billionaire and he's just like, yeah, I'm just going to use my money to like...
Well, I mean, think about the people who have the opportunity to go travel to rural China to save birds and live off the land.
I mean, that part I understand. I just thought it was super convenient for him to be the one who funds the entire organization. And it's like, what do you know? That one meeting with Wen Jie like led to this moment.
Yeah, but he also... co-opted and appropriated her research and her learnings to create a splinter faction that was super extremist, which, you know, also pretty convenient.
Yeah.
I mean, since we're talking about Mr. Evans, we can also talk about just, let's start out with the characters of this story. There are a lot of characters. I don't think any of them could be considered the protagonist besides Wen Jie, who is kind of the person that kicks everything off, right? Like this whole story happens.
Because of her? I guess. I would argue that there are two protagonists, and that's Wen Jie and Wang Miao, who is the nanotech scientist, who is pretty much giving his perspective in current China. Because the book oscillates between flashbacks with the Cultural Revolution and current China, where scientists are going through some weird experiences.
I guess he's like your everyman who, not everyman, but your everyman scientist who like tries to figure out what the hell is going on. And I guess he does infiltrate the ETO, right? That's his role.
I guess my, yeah. Like half of the book is pretty much in his perspective in current time. But the reason why I kind of feel like his character fell flat is for someone who is pretty much a secondary protagonist, he doesn't really make a lot of decisions that kind of drive the action forward. I feel like he was such a passive character and things were just happening to him and he's just like going with whatever ride that he's on. And I couldn't really get into his head. Like you said, he seemed like every man scientist and I didn't really get a good grasp of his personality.
He doesn't necessarily have an arc. Like we said, he's not a hero, right? He's just like there. The guy who like tags along and has stuff happen to him. And the story happens around him and he's kind of just the observer. He's our avatar into learning about this secret war that's going on, this interstellar secret war, and also this VR game that he plays to like learn about the alien civilization.
I thought it was funny when you said avatar and I was like, oh yeah, he plays an avatar
pretty much
the three body problem virtual reality game.
a more compelling character to follow would probably be the hard-boiled cop, Si Chang.
He was the only character I liked, to be perfectly honest. He's the only one that I thought had a little bit of personality. Because even with Wen Jie, I was like, okay, a lot of these terrible things are happening to her, and I can understand her cynicism and her decision to betray humanity, pretty much. but, like, you know, she commits murder, and I'm just like, okay, yeah, that was random. Like, why? And also, aside from her being traumatized, again, I have the same issue with, like, I don't really understand her personality. It doesn't seem like there are a lot of character traits that I can draw from her chapters, although a lot of interesting things do happen in her chapters. I think that some of my favorite scenes in this novel were of, like, her in the Cultural Revolution. I don't know if it's because I don't know much about the Cultural Revolution, but I don't know. It just seemed very visceral reading those chapters.
I mean, I think part of it has to do with just, like, in literature, characters matter, right? Like, having characters with character is important. But how much do you think that is because as readers of, like, Western fiction, we're automatically drawn to the hardboiled detective archetype as, like,
I'm not saying that, like, Dashi should have been, like, the protagonist. I'm just saying that I would have liked more depth with the characters. I just felt like for most of the novel, they were kind of like mouthpieces for plot devices and, like, just a lot of theoretical science. And I'm like, okay, yeah, I get that science is a really big thing in hardcore science fiction. A lot of the fans of that genre, they live for this type of stuff. And I'm not part of that audience. But at the same time, I'm like, it's like, I would like some
more meat on
meat on the characters. And I did not get that.
I get that.
And you know what? Like, this isn't my cup of tea, but it doesn't, like, it's still a great book.
Yeah.
I can appreciate the art without liking it.
I did enjoy the character of Wei Chen, who was the husband of the leader of the National Science Frontier Organization, who told the worst. Like, have you ever been to a Q&A of, like, either at a book Q&A or, like, a film Q&A where you had someone stand up and before they get to the question, they tell their whole life story?
Oh, like, all the time at every single book signing I've been to. Yeah.
Because that was this character in his, like, police deposition. Oh, my God. Do you remember that
part? I do remember it.
I was reading, I was like, oh, God, this is the worst.
You know who he reminded me of? In Devotion of Suspect X, like Keigo Higashino's novel that we read for this book club, there's, like, a math genius.
Yeah.
And he's, like, super antisocial. And he's like, I just want to do math in my small studio. And that's just my dream job.
Yeah, but this guy was a genius and lazy, too.
I know. He's living his best life. But the game that is featured in this novel, the three body problem game, I thought that was, like, super interesting. I feel like someone, because I am someone who plays a lot of video games, I was instantly intrigued, and I really liked the world building and the Trisolarans culture, and how, like, the concept of, like, dehydration and the three different eras, the chaotic era, the stable era, and, like, the death era.
It's interesting that, like, basically the Trisolarans or the Trisolaran Earth Alliance organization are utilizing experiential video games to teach a culture and history to kind of screen out potential recruits, right? Like, they're, like, when we talk about, like, video games as not even art, but as a applied way to learn things, like, this is, like, the end game for that, right?
Yeah.
And I thought it was interesting that during those Trisolar, those, like, three body chapters, you're essentially seeing the progress of science of a whole other civilization. The Trisolarans, I'm sure people listening should know by now, they are the alien race that the Red Coast Project contacts, that are way superior to us in terms of their technology, because they've had years and years of focused research on how to survive in this very chaotic system, right? They're based out of Alpha Centauri, which is the closest star system to the Milky Way. And basically, they are a star system with three suns. And throughout like each chapter of Wang Biao going into the three body, you see a different era of their scientific progress as they figure out what the hell is going on.
And, you know, like their solar system is pretty much the three body problem, which is why the game is called that.
Yeah, which is like a physics problem.
Yeah. I looked it up because I was like, I don't know what this is. According to Britannica, it's the problem of determining the motion of three celestial bodies moving under no influence other than that of their mutual gravitation. And apparently, the three-body problem is unsolvable, but there have been some disputes because some people define a solution differently from other people. So, like, that is a big plot point in this book because they're trying to solve a way to survive and predict how the three suns, how the errors are going to come up. And then pretty much they give up. They're like, there's no way.
Well, because as their understanding of science grows, they start to realize, wait, we're all screwed here. Because sooner or later, we're going to be caught in one of these stars' like gravity fields, and we're going to be pulled in.
Yeah, like there's a point where half of their planet got like destroyed in half because of like one of the...
It was the trisolar syzygy or something, right? Where all three suns were aligned, so their gravity kind of literally pulled the planet apart.
Yeah, it literally pulled the planet apart.
Yeah.
And that was when they were like, oh, we're screwed. We need to leave. But the game really reminded me of, have you heard of the Jejun Institute?
No.
Okay. There's actually an AMC series that's based on this augmented reality game. So it's an augmented reality game that was set in San Francisco. And it started in 2008 and it kind of continued to 2011. And it kind of had a cult following amongst like people who are really into puzzles and people who are pretty much super smart. And pretty much there are like eccentric flyers that are advertising like these fake health, like future tech products. And you kind of like go on a scavenger hunt. You like call like random numbers. You go into abandoned buildings. You find clues, solve puzzles. And pretty much like you find out like halfway through this game, this real life game, that the Jejun Institute, who you've been like following, is like the bad guy. So it kind of reminded me a lot of that, because people who are playing that game, because it's a cult following and because there's kind of like an initiation room, like people actually like randomly meet up, like in the book, like the top players of the three body problem who have a higher probability of being converted,
they have a meetup.
Yeah. And that's exactly what happened in the Jejun Institute. It's pretty great. Wow. There's a documentary on it. Go watch it. But I just wanted to mention that because I thought it was cool.
Yeah. I mean, that meetup in itself was really interesting because the environmentalist guy, Pan Han, he interviews everyone who comes. And you have Wang Miao, and you have a journalist, a philosopher, PhD student, and then two business guys, right?
Yeah.
And it's interesting that of those five, the ones that he recruits is the scientist, the journalist, and the philosopher, and he rejects the capitalist pretty much.
Yeah.
Right. They have a really interesting conversation about colonialism.
Yeah.
Right. And basically the two business people express contrary beliefs. Like, sure, the conquistadors brought civilization to a culture that was quote unquote bloodthirsty, but they also brought famine. And also, like, who's to say that the Aztecs wouldn't have, you know, developed into a more peaceful civilization down the line, right? And then Pan pretty much says, nope, sorry, you're wrong, go away, right? Because his thesis, which is like this faction within the ETL, is the world is fucked, the aliens should come and just wipe us out.
So that's the Adventists.
Yeah.
And then there's the Redemptionists.
Yeah, who see the aliens as a benevolent god or something. Yeah. Like, they have more religious relationship with the Trisolarans. And I thought it was a really interesting contrast with, like, say, the Cultural Revolution, where the Cultural Revolution and, like, Communist Revolution in general is usually seen as, like, a revolt of the common people, the workers, right? The peasants, the working class. Whereas the ETO seems to be a revolt of the intellectuals, right? The people that are so smart that they think humanity is just not worth saving. Because that was Mike Evans's like triggering moment, right? Was when he realized that there's nothing he can do to stop these forests being cut down. Because all these workers, all these common people are so like short-sighted, quote unquote, and can only see like, if I don't cut this down, someone else will. So I might as well like profit from cutting these trees down. Mm-hmm. And to the Adventists and that kind of way of thinking, the world is not worth saving because we're going to destroy it anyways, because the common people can't see the bigger picture.
Yeah. And the interesting thing is both movements, the Cultural Revolution and the Trisolaran like supporters, I guess, they're both kind of in their own ways trying to suppress science. Like the Cultural Revolution, they're like, no intellectuals. And you're teaching reactionary science and that's like against our beliefs. It's totally for Western ideals and you're corrupted. Whereas like with the ETO, they're like, oh, we need to stop progress of human science because they're going to get to a point where they can possibly prevent the Trisolarans to like
take over.
Because that's the thing with the Trisolarans, they have advanced technology, but because every time there is like the three sun devastation, they have to start all over again.
Yeah.
Whereas with humans, we have exponentially like advanced in technology. We are very, very fast.
Well, that was the other thing too, was the advancement of science for the Trisolarans is on a fixed scale. And what scares them about humanity is that we're able to have technological leaps, right? Because we have the ability to conceptualize theoretical science, which is kind of like our superpower apparently in the universe. And the Trisolarans are scared of that because basically in like a century, humanity was able to advance science at the rate that took these Trisolarans like a millennia.
Yeah.
So they're scared of that because it's going to take them 400 years to get to Earth to invade. And in that amount of time, humanity could create the science needed to fight back. And that's why they manipulate the ETO to thwart science pretty much.
And then like the Trisolarans, they sent, like they did something. Like they did some sciencey stuff that
I didn't understand.
They folded a proton into two dimensions, sent it to Earth.
So it took me a while and some like researching on Reddit to kind of figure out what was going on.
I mean, I had to like Google a lot of stuff and watch a lot of like 3D animations to figure out like what it would look like, because there are some really dedicated readers of Three Body Problem who have like come up with animations and theories, and I was like, maybe you can explain this to me in visual terms, because obviously like reading this is not really solving my issue of not understanding what's happening.
Yeah, but that whole sequence was really interesting because when they were trying to unfold this proton, at one point they unfolded into three-dimensional space and it became like hostile to them, which I was reading some other like people trying to explain it, but pretty much essentially at that point attacking another universe with sentient beings in that proton space, and those beings were fighting back. That's why they were able to like
be aggressive. I really like the question of, is science subjective? Like, are the scientific laws, the physics that humans have come up with, are they like actually based on like fixed laws, or are they just shots in the dark? And I think there was like a really good quote in the book about like explaining it, saying a scientist turkey believes that on Thanksgiving, like believes that every day at 10 a.m. they get fed. And then on the day they announce to the other turkeys on Thanksgiving Day, they say, like, they're like, hey, this is the law of the universe. We get fed at 10 a.m. every day, except for that day they get slaughtered. So it's pretty much saying like, oh, they know nothing. They only know they can only make these predictions without really knowing like the scope of where they belong in the universe.
They call it the shooter and the farmer.
Yeah, the shooter theory. And the farmer.
Yeah. And I think
I mean, that's where like speculative, like hard science fiction is interesting because it asks itself that those questions, right? And this, I mean, this whole book is about what happens when we make first contact and what happens when that first contact isn't what we dream about in science fiction before, right? Because first contact in this case, in this book, was made by someone who had zero faith in humanity.
And reverse-wise, the Trisolaran who received the message was like, I don't want my race to invade Earth and delete everything that is beautiful. And
yeah.
And it's just like, you have two people on the other side who are willing to betray their species. And yeah, like first contact, because humanity is so divisive, there really is no way to be like unified against a common enemy. I don't know how the second or third book go. Like, I don't know if it's set like 400 years later, like after the Trisolarans like arrive, or...
I did some reading ahead, and all I can say is it doesn't get any more optimistic about our future. Like, I don't know if Cixin Liu's goal was to kind of depress everybody, but I think what this book comes down to is kind of making you think about how fragile everything, like life on this planet, really is, and how easily it could all be destroyed. I mean, that's been the state of our world since we split the atom, right? Like, at any moment, we can just start a life-changing nuclear holocaust.
I think it's also like the ending of the three-body problem. It is very optimistic because both Miao and whoever the other scientist was. They're like, oh, let's drink and, you know, forget about humanity because we're fucked, even though like we have 400 years until the Trisolarans like arrive. And the Trisolarans, they send one last message saying, you're bugs, meaning you're going to be exterminated once we get there. And Dashi, the police detective guy.
The cop.
He takes them to a field and there are locusts and he says, they're bugs. We've been trying to exterminate them for years and they've survived somehow. And it is a very optimistic way to end the book, saying that like, yeah, humans have resilience, and that is our superpower. We are able to apply theoretical science, and even though there is like an alien race that's trying to hamper that, there are people like Miao who is, you know, building nanotechnology that's going to change the world, and they're not going to stop. So
yeah.
So it is a very optimistic way to end the book. Not sure about the other two books, maybe. Like, maybe everything burns.
Yeah, I mean, this is the first book of a trilogy, and it'd be interesting. Like, I don't know the specifics of the next couple books. I kind of know kind of the Cliff Notes version of what goes on because I was kind of curious. But it does expand the scope a lot in terms of, like, what happens between now and when the invasion arrives.
One observation I do want to mention in this discussion is how the chaotic eras in the three-body problem video game, it's very similar to the chaotic eras that we have in our human world, like the Cultural Revolution and the Holocaust. And it's just, I hate saying it's metaphorical, but it's metaphorical. And I thought it was pretty well done. I wonder, like, because I have a cousin who right now is completing his PhD in astrophysics, and he's studying the same thing with, like, was it radio waves or
microwaves or something?
Microwaves, yeah. That's, like, pretty much his thesis right now. And I'm wondering if he ever read the Korean translation of this book, because I'm pretty sure it exists somewhere.
I mean, it's a very popular book, I'm sure.
Yeah, I'm sure.
I'm sure he's at least heard of it.
But the thing is, even if I attempt to have a conversation about it with him, he's probably going to just spew out a lot of technical stuff. And it's just like, well, that's the difference between me, a basic person, reading this hardcore science fiction novel versus someone who actually knows their stuff.
Well, I mean, hard science fiction isn't necessarily about the technology and the science, though. Like, I think you can technically skip a lot of the sciencey parts and still get at the meat of what this book is about and what the story is about, which is essentially first contact with an alien race and how that might happen and what might come of it.
Yeah, you can appreciate the plot. And I do agree that the plot is very engaging on paper. But the journey there was very long. And there were a lot of big info dumps. And even with the dialogue, there was a lot of exposition. And it's just like, I was like, okay, I know we're getting there, but can we speed it up just a little bit? I don't know if that's just like me being a modern reader, because now modern literature, it's all about like, it's all about pace.
I mean, I did find myself skipping through, like skimming the more technical parts of it in service of getting to the next piece of kind of like plot.
Yeah, but then if you're skimming through the sciencey stuff, that's like 45% of the book. Or like the first half of the book, I would say. Because like towards the latter half, it gets more streamlined into like, okay, there are aliens, we're trying to stop them, yada, yada, yada.
I guess for me, it's more like, okay, at this part, science happens. Or science is being explained. And like, I get this basic idea of what a Hadron Collider does and what, you know, what theoretical like gravity and like how circuits work. I mean, that part where they created a computer out of people, which was interesting.
That was really cool. Yeah.
But I think, yeah, I think the way that I read it, I kind of like, in order to not get bogged down by those sections, I kind of like got about the gist of it and then moved on to where, because they kind of contextualize it later anyways in the story, like why this is important to know.
See, the thing is, like I said on Twitter, I would have DNF'd this book like pretty early on because of the denseness, because of the scientific info dumps. And if I was not reading this for book club, I would have just gone on a book blog or Wikipedia and just like looked at the bullet points of like what happens and like what the important science stuff is. Like, I feel like I would have had a more enjoyable experience just learning that way rather than reading the book, which is a very harsh criticism. But again, it is a groundbreaking book. I just did not enjoy it. And it's, I seem to be in the minority here as well, because I went on Goodreads and, you know, most people have like written raving reviews. And I checked like a lot of our community members' reviews and ratings, and a lot of you guys gave the book like 4 or 5 stars. And I'm like, are you guys all scientists? Are you guys all like mathematicians?
I mean, for me, the science part was like, it was dense, but like through that, I think the central story itself was an interesting portrayal of this specific scientific trope from a kind of a different perspective and different worldview. And what I did like was also the portrayal of like Chinese life. Like, I really enjoyed the fact that like when Wang Miao visits Wenjie in the present time, she uses diminutive names to like call him like Xiao Wang, or she calls her daughter Dong Dong. These names that elders give children that took on an extra sense of familiarity, because I am Chinese and I understand what that means. Like when she was trying to get one of the kids that she cares for to eat, she says, oh, do you want some meat, which translates to rou rou in Chinese, which is something that we say to little kids. You know, do you want some rou rou? And to me, that was really, I guess, fun to read.
I kind of wish that we learned more about Wenjie's daughter, who was a scientist and killed herself because she found out that physics is not real, and finds out that there are things in science that are out of whack because of the proton that was sent by the Trisolarans.
Well, I don't think she knew that. And I think, likewise, what I kind of wish we had more insight on was, how did Wenjie feel when she found out that her daughter's death was caused by the Trisolarans?
Yeah, definitely. I wish that was in there.
Like, because she was the one who decided to betray humanity, but I don't think she expected it to be such a personal betrayal. Right. She expected, yeah, this is something that humanity is going to reckon with in 400 years.
Yeah.
And by then, and I like, would have
oh,
to worry
not
with
now.
Like, yeah.
I will be dead by the time that the time.
Yeah, I definitely feel like that was an opportunity to kind of, but then like, what would you want to see? Like, do you want to see remorse? Do you want to see like, oh shit, I made a mistake? Like in the end, like.
I feel like I just needed a page. You know, like a flashback page of her like finding the body, or at the funeral, or just like before her daughter like killed herself, like her kind of being like dead inside, like just something.
Yeah. I think that's something that maybe this book was missing, was more personal stories, right? Because like we said, I think we both enjoyed the character of Su-chang, the cop detective. But at the same time, we didn't really get a lot of his story as well. We just knew, oh, this is a cool guy that smokes cigars and like is rough and tumble. Like if there was a criticism for this book, it would be that. Like it's really good describing what happens, but you don't really end up, I guess, rooting for any character. And again, I wonder how much of that is our training in finding characters to root for in these types of stories because of the books that we've read before. And how much of that is just the nature of like hard sci-fi? Maybe this is just how this type of story goes.
I did think it was really cool when Wang Miao, like he is taking photographs and then like the countdown shows up.
Yeah.
And then he starts seeing it like just through his eyes and he kind of goes towards like a mental breakdown.
Well, he also starts sciencing, right?
Like yeah.
Doing control experiments.
I thought that was really funny. And also like I was just because I studied screenwriting, like I just kind of imagined it as like a scene in like a movie.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, that would be a really good scene. And it got me thinking, like, I feel like if this book was adapted into a TV series where the science isn't just like a wall of text and they can kind of like show it with like animation and have the characters have personalities through the actors' performances, I feel like I would have been really into it.
Yeah, I think this book was set to be adapted into like an animated series or an animated movie. Once upon a time, but from what I read on Wikipedia, the project has been postponed. And I think a lot of it has to do with just how, like, this book would be pretty hard to adapt without some serious adaptation in terms of, like, characters. I mean, how would you, if you were to adapt this into a TV series or movie, like, who would the focus be on? Probably Wen Jie, right?
Yeah, Wen Jie.
Or would she be the antagonist, right?
I wouldn't really assign, like, an antagonist or protagonist, I would probably give the main characters equal screen time. And you just kind of see their perspective kind of unfold. That was kind of an issue I had with this book in terms of structure. Like, I don't mind the flashbacks and then going into current day and then going into the game. I just wish that the chapter lengths were consistent, because I felt like there were like moments where you go into flashback mode and it's like maybe 20 pages, and then you go into current day and it's like much, much longer. And I don't know, it just kind of messed with my head in terms of pacing.
Yeah. So I guess to wrap up our discussion of this book, what is your opinion on the, I guess, state of mankind or humanity? Like, would you have saved us or would you have doomed us?
Oh, hell no. I would not have saved us. Like, I mean, I don't think I would have sent a message to aliens saying, hey, come destroy us. I would expect that to happen regardless, but I don't think I would want that responsibility on my shoulders. I'm more of a chaotic neutral. Like, I'm just like, okay, if humanity is wiped out, I'm good. We've lived for a very long time as a species. I think, you know, we're ready to perish and give another species a chance. But I'm not going to actively destroy my own life.
I think I would probably, I wouldn't have doomed us. I probably would have reported like, hey, yo, some people kind of know where we are and might be coming to destroy us. So we should, you know, halfway through the book, I kind of thought this was a whole, like a Xanatos Gambit for Wen Jie, kind of like a Ozymandias from the Watchmen, where it's like, what if we had a singular focus for the world and that brings us all together and creates peace, right? I thought that was maybe where this was going. Like, if we focus our entire energy on not being wiped out by this scientifically superior race, then the whole world will come together, right?
I feel like that is such an idealist, like...
It's a very Western, like, heroic
no
type
way
of thing, right?
In hell would that happen.
I mean, kind of did. I mean, you have, like, the Chinese European and like American armed forces coming together.
They're still fighting people who are like.
That's true. What did you think of the one action scene, which is like when that.
When that boat got like sliced.
Yeah.
I thought that was pretty cool. More action, please. What can I say? Like I said, I am a basic person. I just want, I want my action scenes. I want, I just want the pacing to be fast. I don't know. I'm a millennial. What are you going to do?
And on that note, I guess that'll also do it for our discussion of The Three-Body Problem by Suxing Liu, translated by Ken Liu. If you have any thoughts about our discussion, have anything to add, or if you want to explain science to us, please sign off on our Goodreads forums. We always look forward to reading your feedback on the books that we read. Let's just know that people are reading along with us. And thank you, Rira, for bearing with us on this initial read of 2020. I feel like this this next book pick for February is a reaction to my book pick for you.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I was just like, oh, man, like... How do I get back at Marvin for making me read this book? It took me so long to finish this book. I usually finish like 400-page books in like a matter of like maybe 3 days. It took me like a week and a half to get through.
I'm so sorry.
But to be fair, I Googled a lot of stuff. Mm. I tried. I want credit for trying.
Now you can say you've read this book and it just, you know. It wasn't your cup of tea, which I kind of knew after our second book club pick of the series when you read, was it How to Survive in the Science Fiction Universe?
Yeah. Also, like, I think both of us read Nine Fox Gambit by Yoon Ha-Lee, and I was just like, I can't. I finished it, but I was like, I can't. This is not my genre. Like, I can't. But it's also February, and it is the month of... Valentine's Day.
Are you falling for that capitalist ploy?
Yes, but also we haven't read an adult romance novel. We've read YA novels that are coming of age and have romance in them. We've read like other genre picks with like romance intertwined in it, but we haven't read like a proper romance novel that is straight up like relationship and rom-com like rom-com adventures, and I had a really hard time finding adult romance novels by Asian authors that feature Asian characters, because there are a couple of Asian American romance novelists, but their books are set in like Victorian England or
scientifically it's the sexiest time, you know.
Gross, like, please stop. So
do you prefer Regency England? Is that the thing?
Yeah. I mean, I like contemporary romance a lot more than historical romance.
It's messier, right? It's a little messier, or a little less about rich people, I guess, is the...
Oh no, there's always rich people in romance novels. It's just that like it's a more of a level playing field, you know. It's not always that you have to marry a rich guy to save yourselves from poverty, which is why I really liked Kiss Quotient, because the female protagonist is, you know, higher on the economic scale compared to the male love interest.
Oh.
But I read it. I loved it. I did have some issues with it when I first read it. So I'm wondering if those issues are going to bother me the second time I read it. Warning, there are a lot of sex scenes in it, so be careful when you're reading this book in public. You don't want someone to stand over your shoulder and read parts of those sex scenes.
They really shouldn't be standing over your shoulder in the first place. You know?
Oh, so man, I've had so many.
If they catch a glimpse of word porn, it's really their own fault.
I mean, I've had so many people look over my shoulder while I'm like reading on my Kindle or writing on my laptop. It's very rude, but people are nosy.
And now they know that you like sexy stuff.
I mean, I have no shame. Live a little.
I am looking forward to reading the book. It's been a book that's been on our radar for years now. And as someone who doesn't read a lot of romance, it's good for me to expand my my reading repertoire. And since I did make you read this hard sci-fi, it's only fair that I delve into your world as well. And I guess hope you all will read along with us. And I know a lot of you have already read this book. So please, please, please sound off on our forums and let us know your thoughts about the book so we can also discuss those on our podcast. But on that note, thank you for joining us again on this episode of Books and Boba. Rira, I'll see you next time.
All right, bye.
Bye, everyone. Thanks for listening to Books and Boba. This episode was hosted by Marvin Yue and Rira Yu and produced and edited by Marvin Yue. This podcast was recorded at the Potluck Podcast Studios located within the Visual Communications offices in downtown Los Angeles. You can learn more about Visual Communications and their programs such as the Los Angeles Asian Pacific Film Festival by going to their website at vcmedia.org. Thanks also to the Potluck Podcast Collective, a collective of Asian American hosted podcasts that Books and Boba is a proud member of. You can learn more about our fellow Potluck podcast by checking out the website podcastpotluck.com.
But we're still here and we're going strong.
It's an exciting time in Asian America. There are more movies, TV shows, books, and music reflecting us than ever. But all of these represent just a small slice of Asian American culture and experiences. So what do? Tell more slices. Asian Americana is a show that explores these slices of distinctly Asian American culture and history. We've talked about how Chinese Americans built California's Sacramento Delta, the art scene turns gallery institution Giant Robot, a play that explores the lost Cambodian pop music of the 60s and 70s, and, of course, Boba, just to name a few stories. You can find Asian Americana at asianamericana.com or on your podcast app. And we're getting tired of proof.